I'm Vermont Edition producer Daniela Fierro, popping in to say we've edited this podcast a little for clarity and brevity. Thanks for listening.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Michaela Lafrac. In the lead up to Tuesday, election anxiety was a pretty bipartisan feeling. Coverage of the presidential race was a constant presence in many homes. And at the local level, people in our region were trying to figure out which candidates would best be able to improve their lives and their communities. And it's just never a good feeling to have no idea who's going to be in charge next. Then Tuesday came and went. The results were clear. Donald Trump will be our country's 47th president. Republicans have control of the U.S. Senate, and the U.S. House is about evenly split right now, with some races yet to be called. Here in Vermont, our governor and lieutenant governor are both anti-Trump Republicans, and there have been some big shakeups in the legislature, though it's still majority Democrat. As always, we just ask that you are respectful with your opinion and open to hearing others. You can also email us your thoughts, as many of you already have, to vermontedition@vermontpublic.org. And if you email us, I or a producer might lightly edit your comment just to make it a bit shorter, to allow for more voices, or to make it easier for me to read. We do this for all of our shows. Here with me today is Matthew Dickinson. He's a political science professor at Middlebury College and the author of many articles about the presidency, Congress, and presidential advisors. Matt, welcome back to the show.
Great to be with you, Michaela.
Yeah, we're so glad to have you. I'm so curious about what the tenor of conversation has been like on Middlebury's college campus in the last couple days. What are you hearing?
Well, we had prepared them well, that this election was going to be very close and that there was a significant chance that Donald Trump would win. That wasn't their preferred outcome. We have a very liberal campus. But in contrast to 2016, when it was just the catastrophic reaction, they seem to be handling it quite well.
Hmm. When you say quite well, what does that mean?
The emphasis I put was this is a short-term defeat in a battle. You haven't lost the war. Continue to go out there, support candidates who support your agenda, vote. There's a strong likelihood, and we can talk about this, that if the Republicans overreach, in 2 years, you may have a Democratic majority in the House and or the Senate. So this is a short-term setback, and they seem to acknowledge the importance of, rather than hanging their heads, going out there and fighting the good fight.
Hmm. And you acknowledged that Middlebury is a left-leaning campus by and large, as is Vermont. But of course, there are still many folks who hold different points of views. This hour is a space to hear all of those views. And Matthew, I'm curious if you feel like the folks on Middlebury's campus, either students or professors who might feel excited about these results, feel like they have the space to air those opinions.
Well, certainly in the classrooms, I think, certainly the classrooms I teach, I think they do. They're not going around gloating. But the conversation on social media and in the dining halls, I'm not privy to that. I would hope that there's a recognition that what happened on Tuesday is democracy in action, and that we should highlight that first, that people are contesting visions for the country, one vision, one. But that doesn't mean there's not overlap between the Trump supporters and the Harris supporters. They all want the same thing.
Hmm. Well, we received a number of emails ahead of today's show. I'm going to share a couple now. One is from Karina in Grafton, who writes, "You asked how we're feeling. I feel very sad, extremely worried about our country. I can't believe he will be back in power. A convicted felon is the best we could do. I've never been this worried. But for our Vermont election, I feel really good." Matt, I'm curious for your thoughts there, because I have noticed we've gotten a couple different emails expressing that same feeling, this kind of split between how folks feel about national politics and local. How different are they?
Well, Vermont's unique in that our Republican Party, by and large, headed by Phil Scott, is not a Trump-centric Republican Party. There are Trump voters in this state, and as your lead-in suggested, he's increased his support. But Phil Scott is one of the first Never Trumpers, and he's been reelected with overwhelming margins every time. So I think there's a sense that in Vermont, at least, a democratically controlled legislature, a Phil Scott-led Republican Party, can work together. They're not trying to sabotage each other. They're trying to do what's best for Vermonters. And there's a sense that they can sit at the table and disagree amicably and try to find that common ground moving forward. You don't always get that sense with Republicans and Democrats in Congress, for instance.
Well, let's take some phone calls now. We have Luther calling in from Montreal. Luther, you're on the air. What are your thoughts?
Hey, how are you today?
Good, thanks.
I'm concerned as a Canadian because there's a lot of dovetailing of the policies, you know? But what I was so shocked about is how little policy there was spoken of in this election. I mean, for me personally, take if I was sick, I would vote for a park bench if it gave me chemo if I needed it. And I feel like, you know, being able to care about personality of a candidate is a luxury for people who don't have problems the government can fix, for instance. And what was also strange is, like, did you watch the 2020 primaries? There's a representative from Hawaii. Her name was Tulsi Gabbard. She dismantled Kamala's criminal justice stance in like 90 seconds. The next day, Kamala dropped out of the race. And I don't know much about Trump's policies in his first presidential term, but he did have something called the First Step Act, which allowed nonviolent criminals to try and get out of jail. But when they debated, neither did he follow Tulsi's lead in trying to dismantle Kamala. He didn't even, for lack of a better word, pimp his own policy, which actually helped mostly brown and black people to get out of jail.
Luther, I'm going to jump in here because I'm really curious to hear our guest Matthew Dickinson's thoughts on that point you had made a little bit earlier about the importance of personality in this presidential campaign over policy proposals sometimes. Matt, do you agree with that assessment?
Not entirely. Certainly, these were distinct personalities. But I think there's a tendency to overstate, particularly for Trump supporters, this sense of a cult of personality. They're very rational in why they're supporting Trump over Harris. And remember, you have to choose. You can't sort of say, I'm going to take a little of Harris's agenda and a little of Trump. Even though you probably, most Americans, support elements from both of them. You have to choose. So it makes it look like we're a little more divided. But there were real policy differences here. And the economy was number one, but on immigration, certainly the Trump tax cuts are coming up. They're expiring. Trump's is going to try to renew those. Harris had a different set of tax cuts. I can go down the list. I think policy really ultimately is an underappreciated reason for Trump's victory and why Harris lost. And there are real differences between them on policy.
You just brought up immigration as one of those key issues, and that reminds me of an email that we got from a listener named Jeanette, who writes, I am an immigrant and arrived in America on a marriage visa during the last Trump presidency. There was a quote-unquote Muslim ban at the time, a restriction on immigration from certain Muslim-majority countries. They go on to say, this was probably the first time I was made aware of my white privilege. I'm from Scandinavia. I'm not a citizen yet, and therefore I cannot vote. After this election, I am disappointed. I don't think the Democratic Party is liberal or progressive enough. And then they go on to make a different point, to say that they're going to use this defeat of Kamala Harris to take initiative and action, continue to make economic investments, and do what I can to improve my family, my local ecosystem, and my community. I want to mention, they close with, that I know quite a few Trump voters, and I enjoy them very much. We all just care about our community and want what is best for us. Matt, for this first point that they made about being disappointed that the Democratic Party is not liberal enough, honestly, that kind of reminded me of the situation here in Vermont and some some of the complaints that we've heard from our listeners that the Democratic and Progressive Party in the state legislature has gone a bit too far left, particularly in terms of tax policy. What do you think?
Well, certainly in Vermont, the affordability issue loomed large. Your guests yesterday made it clear they owed their election to rising concern about what they viewed as a Democratic Party that had moved too far left in the very admirable objective of expanding the social safety, social welfare safety net in areas like healthcare and housing and so on. But you have to pay for it. And so there is a movement to increase the Republican representation and the belief that that would sort of focus a little bit more on the cost of these programs. And between the two, they hope they get a working relationship. Nationally, it's going to be interesting to see what happens. Bernie Sanders came out and said, you know, basically the Democrats deserve to lose because they've abandoned the working class. Well, that's Donald Trump's argument as well. I mean, the biggest single driver of Trump's vote versus Harris was the diploma divide. Individuals who do not have a college education gravitated to Trump. And by the way, that's not just white voters. That's Latino voters. He's been increasing his support among Latinos in every election. That was black voters. African-Americans went overwhelmingly for Harris, but not nearly as much as they did for Biden. Trump is, and most of that concern centers on economic issues, but there was some overlap with immigration concerns as well. Legal immigration is an important issue for Latino voters, many of whom are living on the border and want to see stronger immigration control. So these issues are complex issues, but ultimately voters had to make a choice between one of two candidates.
Let's take a couple more calls here. And a reminder, this is a space for you, whatever you feel about the results of the presidential or local elections. We just hope you call in and you're respectful with your opinion and open as well. 800-639-2211 is our number. Let's go to Peter in Braintree next. Peter, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. This election really makes me remember the George Washington farewell address. I have a question based on that.
Please.
Imagine if elections took place by placing a plus one, a plus half, and a minus half for each of up to three candidates. You would no longer be incentivized to vote against one party. Each state would have sort of a mixture of maybe three or four parties, and it would no longer be just two parties trying to sabotage each other. We would be reminded of being citizens with different views rather than just opponents trying to sabotage the other and be the lesser of two evils.
Mm. Thank you for that thought, Peter. So changing the way that we do elections and we vote for people on a really base level. Matt, what do you think? Is that a possibility? And are you familiar with Washington's farewell address? I'm not.
Well, I think the caller is alluding that Washington warned against the spirit of partisanship, really, factions. He saw the emergence in his administration of this divide between sort of Alexander Hamilton, the Treasury Secretary's views about where the country should go, and the views of Thomas Jefferson. Jefferson much more emphasizing states' rights. And more or less, that division has endured, and it's been stoked in part, and I think this is what the caller is getting at. You know, when you cast your vote, you can only vote for one candidate or the other. And the winner of the most popular votes in the state gets all those states' electoral college votes. So, you know, this isn't hand grenades or horseshoes. You don't get points for finishing close or a second. You'd get nothing if you finish second. And so it really tends to produce, as the caller is quite right, we have a range of views, but our choices are limited to one of two. And our choices often don't fully reflect our views. That's the system we have. And short of sort of changing the way we allocate votes, it's really hard for third parties to do well. Jill Stein didn't get more than a percentage of the point of the vote here. Robert Kennedy Jr. ultimately had to ally himself with Donald Trump to get his agenda on there. It is a two-party system.
Hmm. Well, speaking of Jill Stein, I believe we have a caller with some thoughts on that candidate. Stacy in Morrisville is on the line. Stacy, go ahead.
Hi. Yes, I voted for Jill. I looked at her platform. Unfortunately, she didn't get hardly any press. So we're definitely like embedded in a two-party system. And part of the flaw of that is other people aren't allowed to speak. Her platform was against war. She had a good economic plan. I don't think a lot of people knew about her. And I just want to say I'm not a fan of either Trump or Harris, mainly with Harris, her stance with the genocide that's occurring. You know, the Leahy Law, our Senator Patrick Leahy was instrumental in the Leahy Law years ago, which prohibits selling weapons to countries causing human rights abuses. So I'm not understanding how they're getting away with breaking that law. So that's why I didn't vote for her.
Well, Stacey, thank you for calling in. And also just say on, I think every news organization has different guidelines about which candidates they select to interview or put on their airwaves. Vermont Public has a specific set of guidelines for our debates that we aired that folks might have seen or heard with requirements for who can participate in those debates. So if you have questions about that, very open to answering them. You can write us at vermontedition@vermontpublic.org. We got this one email I wanted to share with everyone. It's from Tom in Barry, who writes, "I felt ignored by my Democratic representatives in Washington County when I raised concerns of balancing important issues such as climate change with affordability. So I voted for more Republicans in this election than any other election cycle. I hope my Democratic senators and representatives are now listening." Matt, do you think we've seen more split tickets than we have in the past here in Vermont? Anecdotally, it does sound like yes.
Yes, and a caller should take some credit here. His views, if it was a him, were shared by a lot of Vermonters who felt like the supermajority Democratic control of the Assembly was shutting out an important perspective here, that sort of spending side of addressing the affordability issue. And they sent a message. And this is what elections do, right? Elections are a means for individuals who otherwise don't participate in politics to remind our elected officials that they work for the people. And I thought Tuesday's message in breaking those supermajorities in the House and the Senate was a very powerful message. Now, it puts the onus on Phil Scott now. He cannot simply say, "It's not my fault, folks. It's a supermajority there that's overriding my veto." He has to come to the table now and be willing to negotiate. But I think Tuesday's election was the first step in, I often heard from a lot of people, rebalancing the relationships between the two parties in a way that's going to lead to productive compromise.
We have Robert in Burlington calling in. Robert, what are your thoughts?
Hi. So it's quite similar about that. I wanted to say something about political greed and what happens when one side or the other takes a win and runs with it, and they run too far with it. I really think that the Vermont Democratic Party did that when they had a veto-proof majority in both houses 2 years ago. The question was, well, then what can we get pushed through? And they knew that they were going to be pushing things through past Phil Scott's vetoes. But Phil Scott has coattails. And the coattails won a lot this last election, and sometimes it happened in kind of perverse situations. Namely, the Chittenden North District that had Irene Renner, a moderate Democrat that voted contrary to the Democratic Party line on several times, yet she was defeated by somebody. She was one of the good ones. She was one of the ones that was working across the aisle, yet she was defeated by somebody with coattails, with Phil Scott's coattails. I just thought that was really unfortunate. I think that, you know, in the national politics, I think that Trump does that. He has, you know, almost no mandate, you know, 8 years ago, yet acted like he did. Things get reversed. Your policies don't last. They don't last very long if you're greedy. And so you have to be careful not to shoot the weapon, even if you have bullets in it.
Robert, thank you. I think that what I'm hearing there is this frustration that's been echoed by many other folks, not just you, about the danger of a overly partisan or two-party system or an imbalance of power where one group, no matter which one, has perhaps too much control. You brought up the state legislature, and I wanted to read an email that we got from a listener named Leslie, who has a comment for state house legislators, they say. And here is what they wrote. What I would like to see is more availability of the senators and representatives on their committees. My group, Vermont Just Justice Advocates, advocates for criminal legal reform. We've had to work very, very hard to present information to committees. Our emails go unanswered, and basically, as Vermont citizens, we've observed the state house in action on multiple occasions and were treated like outsiders and ignored. What I'd like to see in this upcoming legislative session is communication from the legislators to their concerned constituents. Emails need to be answered. Let's go back to the phones. We have Ron calling in from Northfield. Ron, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. Two points, one nationally and one locally.
Sure.
The reason myself and a lot of other people didn't vote for Kamala Harris has nothing to do with anything else anybody's been saying. Basically, the selection process, okay? She failed miserably as a candidate herself, okay, and had to drop out. Then she gets the nomination of the Democratic Party without a single vote, a single primary election, so that harkens us back to the old days of when candidates were chosen in smoke-filled rooms by big party bosses, by Boss Tweed in New York,
okay,
and by others in other places. Okay, the selection process was very, very bad, and the candidate was not vetted either. It just was you push the other guy out and you throw somebody in there without seeing if they're electable or not, and give them 100 days to run. As far as the local is concerned, I really believe that the Republicans in this state, okay, the ones that get to win and become governor or lieutenant governor, okay, in many cases are people that have done the calculus and have determined that there is no way, okay, we could get elected if we said we were Trump. We were Trump fans. So whether they are actually Trump fans or not, they build themselves as anti-Trump fans, which is the only way that they feel that they could get elected. Hmm. Okay, those are my points.
Thank you, Ron, for that. I'd love for our guest to respond to your first point there about the selection process of Kamala Harris. That was a couple months ago over the summer when President Joe Biden dropped out of the presidential race and endorsed Kamala Harris. But the summer at this point, at least to me, feels like 10 years ago. Matthew Dickinson at Middlebury College, can you remind us a bit of how that process, that selection process, which was rather unique this year, worked?
Yes. And I want to say that I think the process did a real disservice to Kamala Harris. It put her in a very difficult position. But essentially, after that disastrous first and only debate between Biden and Trump, it seemed to indicate that the whispering campaign that was attributed to Republican partisan motives about his decline was actually true. The Democrats found themselves in a difficult position. Polls suggested Biden could not win. And so they had to move quickly. The convention, the Democratic convention, was coming up. And so they short-circuited the process. The caller's quite right. And they decided their best chance was to essentially anoint Kamala Harris. And that, we shouldn't forget, it paid immediate dividends. Her polling went way up. She moved ahead of Trump, but then she plateaued. And she plateaued because she had to define herself without the usual 15-month process of combating rivals for trying to win this nomination. And in that period, voters get to know you. Well, nobody knew who she was. She had been Biden's understudy. So that put her in a very difficult position. And arguably, that is the biggest single factor that cost her the race. She just did not have an opportunity to say, this is who I would be as president. And it wasn't her fault. It was unfortunate. And I think the Democrats are maybe second guessing, not doing what people like Dean Phillips said they should have done, which is to think very carefully about having Joe Biden be their nominee. But think not in August. Go back to January and debate whether he is the person that should be on the ticket. They didn't do that, and they paid a price.
Hmm. We were talking earlier about changing the way that we vote in this country, and also the importance or lack of importance of third-party votes. We got an email from Chris who says, third-party voting is a waste of a vote. RFK Jr. is an extreme danger to our country. And again, listeners, if you have thoughts on this election, no matter what they are, as long as you are respectful and open to hearing other perspectives, we would really love to hear from you today. You can email us at vermontedition@vermontpublic.org or call 800-639-2211. Let's go next to Greg in White Plains, New York. Greg, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Actually, I'm in Upper J, the phone number.
Gotcha.
Because that's how I get GPR. I have an observation. We've watched Trump run for president like three times. He's on the airwaves every day of the year. I think people are increasing in following him because he defies the government. Basically, he defies the law. He defies taxes. He defies a lot of systems that are put in place by the government. And this might be a wake-up call to the way we run things, but it's people are not happy with the way government occurs, and they see Trump being like their bully pulpit, and he announces what he hates about it. He doesn't do anything to fix any of it, but he basically can talk the talk, and to me it shows that a lot of people would like to be able to do what he does.
Okay, that Trump rhetoric and his personality really shaping this campaign in your eyes. Let's go next to Sue in Williston. Sue, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Oh, hi. I am really, really surprised with my own personal reaction to Trump winning. I thought that I was going to be devastated because I find him to be just an offensive human being all the way around, not even looking at him as a politician. But I have many family members that I love and respect who wanted Trump to win. So I respect their choice. And I also live in a community where we had Trump and Harris signs on either sides of lawns and whatnot, and everybody gets along fine. And so I feel like we can just move forward. Let's move forward and, you know, not to sound like a politician, but we do have a lot of work to do. And so I'm just not mortified like I thought I would be because I respect other people who said that they wanted Trump to win. So that's just my perspective.
Yeah, thank you so much for sharing that, Sue. It's interesting. So we've also heard from folks who do feel that shock and fear that you were saying you thought you might feel, but you don't this time around. One person wrote, "I am a woman and a military veteran. I am gobsmacked at the fact Trump won. I probably shouldn't be since we live in a patriarchal society, but I see old ladies my age in Ukraine and I weep for them and am terrified that I will end up like them." So what I'm hearing here is just a real range of emotions from folks. And if you are feeling a different emotion, maybe a positive one right now, we'd love to hear from you too. 800-639-2211. Let's go next to Bob in Rutland. Bob, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yes, thank you. I was going to say, many times when I contacted legislators in the past, they would say that there were a lot of streaming or internet meetings going on, but they were not having many public hearings. And I know I'm talking to many people, the live public hearing and open meeting is much more preferable for people to get out their opinions. So they felt like they were cut off, you know, here in the state of Vermont in the legislature. Thank you.
Thank you. So a desire to feel more connected to that legislative process. Let's go to one more call before we go back to our guest, Ryan in Wallingford. Ryan, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, yes. I just wanted to say that I feel the left in general, both nationally and locally, has gone too far to the left in terms of an equal and opposite reaction to the polarization of the right. I voted for Socrates, for crying out loud. The reason
I write in, I assume.
that was not an option. So I did that as a protest vote. I voted seriously down ballot, also a split ticket. I knew that the state was going to go to Harris, and I knew I wasn't throwing it one way or the other. I think Trump is a danger, to say the least, but I felt kind of hoodwinked by the way that Harris was just appointed. And I feel that the left has abused their power, at least in the state. And like one of the other callers said, they took their supermajority and they stopped listening. And now they paid the price and lost their supermajority. And I feel Senator Sanders was exactly right nationally. Hmm. We've abandoned the working class and we've stopped listening. I don't feel I have a home in the Democratic Party. I don't feel I have a home in the Republican Party. So I'm an independent. I've never registered for either side.
Hmm. Well, thank you, Ryan, for calling in. What I'm hearing is something that is kind of triggering memories for me of the 2016 elections, when I heard lots of folks saying in that election as well, they weren't voting. They were abstaining from voting in the presidential race. I mean, we heard that from a number of elected representatives in our state here, including, I'm thinking of John Rogers, who appears to have won the lieutenant governorship, and his opponent, David Zuckerman, just this morning conceded that race. John Rogers said that he wrote in Phil Scott for president. Matthew Dickinson, do you think this is becoming an increasingly popular feeling at the local level to abstain entirely from voting for president?
Well, I don't know how popular it is, but the sentiment driving it is broad. The number of people who are registered or call themselves independent nationally has skyrocketed, so that more independents, according to Gallup, there are more independents than Democrats or Republicans. And that is part of Trump's appeal. Let's be clear here. He had no track record in politics before 2016. And so he could speak authentically to this group of people who say just what your caller did. I don't think the Republican Party, the professional political class, or the Democratic Party is listening to my concerns. And that's partly what drives the diploma divide. People who have college education just participate in politics more. They contribute money more. They write letters to op-ed. And the people who have not, who are working in service industries or trade industries, feel like the political class is not listening to them.
Other listeners who wrote in are feeling deeply, a deep sadness about the political divides in our country. Diana in Johnson writes, "I fear for the world. I'm afraid that our collective fear is forcing us to react with emotion rather than respond after a pause with mindfulness. I'm scared of other Americans, frightened that so many of them are so different from me that they could vote as they did. Democracy is in a perilous place, with human reasoning at an all-time low. Human kindness, compassion, and human services might crumble." And let's try to squeeze in another call here. We're going to go next to Frederick in Brattleboro. Frederick, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hey, I've just been thinking about sort of how the two parties are judged nationally, how they're perceived, and that the Democrats are still sort of running campaigns where they emphasize, you know, integrity and inclusiveness and these sorts of things, whereas I feel like the Republicans have just sort of thrown the rule book out, and there really isn't any one thing you can kind of hold on to other than, I guess, you know, power, masculinity, whatever, is sort of what's emphasized. But there's no sort of consistent message or, just sense of integrity that I see anymore at all.
Hmm. Yeah, thank you, Fred. I've seen that sentiment echoed in a number of emails we've received as well. Let's go to Jeff in Stowe next. Jeff, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I was kind of surprised by some of the election results in Vermont being such a blue stronghold. It looks like, the Republican Party did take more votes in some houses. I'm wondering if the perceived wealth gap in Vermont, I'm living in a kind of wealthier town, if that wealth gap kind of played out in the kind of disenfranchisement of the working class, and if that kind of played back to your caller's earlier sentiments, if that's causing more votes going in a way that would be surprising.
Thanks, Jeff. Matt Dickinson, what do you think?
I think the caller is exactly right. That affordability issue plays out in it, trying to buy a starter home, getting a job that pays enough to get health care, school education tax. All of these issues involve inequality and wealth. Some people able to handle these issues better than the people who lack that money. And I think that drove a lot of what happened on Tuesday with the Republicans breaking that supermajority hold in both the House and the Senate.
Hmm. Well, Matt, we have to get you back to that job that pays you now. Thank you so much for joining us. Matthew Dickinson is a political science professor at Middlebury College. We hope to talk to you again soon.
I would like to do that. Thank you, Michaela.
One more email here before we move on. Susan in Warren wrote to us to say that they feel saddened by the outcome of the election, but personally see it as a call to action. Here is what I will do, Susan writes. I will find organizations that support my values and donate to them to the best of my ability. I will also encourage people to find ways to help in their local community, not only financially, but to volunteer time at the local food pantry, to drive Meals on Wheels, and many more local opportunities. We are all in this together. It has been really heartening to hear from so many of you today about how you are processing the election results and the wide range of emotions you're feeling. Adults have to do that for themselves, and they also have to help kids in their lives understand what's going on, too. My daughter's only 3, and she has been asking me lots of questions about what a president is, if it's like being a teacher at school or more like being a princess. And that is a hard one for me to answer. We want to hear from you about how you're talking to your kids about the election. Have you figured out a good way to explain why your family might be feeling differently right now than another kid's family? Give us a call at 800-639-2211 or email VermontEdition at vermontpublic.org. Joining me for this conversation is Jane Lindholm. She is the host of the podcast But Why, a show for curious kids, and Vermont Edition superfans certainly know her name. Jane, welcome.
Hi, Michaela. Nice to talk with you again.
Nice to talk with you, too. So you've done a number of episodes recently related to this momentous period in our lives. Tell us a little bit about the programming you've done on But Why.
We wanted to give kids and their adults, because we know a lot of adults are also dealing with misinformation or a lack of understanding of the political system, a sense of what happens in a presidential election, how votes are counted, why we have things like red states and blue states, with the idea that information is power. And so if kids are informed about what's happening around them, they have a better way to sort of filter all of the information that may be coming at them now as the election is over as well.
Hmm. I really liked the show that you did about red states and blue states because it added some nuance for kids that I think is helpful for adults, too, about how, you know, the state you live in might be, quote unquote, red or blue, but that doesn't mean that everybody in it feels the same way about mm-hmm. things. How did you approach explaining that to kids?
Well, I mean, we always assume on But Why, and I know you do, too, on Vermont Edition, that there are many, many different viewpoints, and people, kids especially, are coming with a variety of ways that they're living and cultural viewpoints and parental perspectives. And so not to assume that everybody has the same perspective when they're listening to our show, and that also, you know, people want to feel heard and seen. And so if you say, you know, you live in a red state, but you're a blue voter or vice versa, you don't want kids to feel like, wait a minute, that doesn't reflect my reality. Why am I not included in this? And so just, yeah, giving everybody a sense that there are lots of different perspectives, even when you may be hearing that one place voted extremely in this direction or extremely in another direction.
Hmm. So, Jane, you're a host of a podcast for curious kids. You're also a parent to 2 kids. What kinds of conversations have you been having in your own life with your kids? What kind of questions are they asking you right now?
I have a 3rd grader and a 5th grader, and they're both very aware of what's happening in the news, maybe because we have Vermont Public on while I'm making dinner at night, but also because conversations are happening in schools. When we discussed the election results on Wednesday morning, my 3rd grader said, this kid's going to be happy, this kid's going to be happy, this kid's going to be happy, this kid's going to be sad, these 5 other kids are going to be neutral or sad. She knew exactly who was a Trump supporter, who was a Harris supporter, probably less so for some of our state politics. But, you know, kids are talking about these things. If the parents are talking about them, the kids are talking about them. So not assuming that kids don't have a sense of it was a start in our household. There's just understanding that whenever news breaks, kids at that age have a sense of what's happening, and I don't want peer-to-peer conversations to be their only source of information.
Mm. What do you want their main sources of information to be?
We listen to the news, watch the news, read the news, and then talking within our family. You know, I think about it a little bit the same way I think about other challenging conversations to have with kids, whether it's conversations about their bodies, about sexuality, about other forms of news that are breaking, is asking open-ended questions, letting them have a question and then answering it, and not going too far into what they're asking so that I'm overwhelming them with information, and also thinking about age appropriateness. So kids your daughter's age, you know, you can have that conversation about princess versus principal kind of thing, but you probably don't need to go deeply into the Electoral College. About 0 to 3, you don't really need to talk to kids much about breaking news. 3 to 5, you kind of wait and see if they have any questions. And beyond that, you should assume they are hearing and seeing things. And if you are scrolling, if you are watching the news, if you are having conversations with a spouse or a friend, they are hearing that. And so you probably do need to at least get a sense of what questions they may have.
Yeah. And I also liked the point that you made that you don't have to answer a question with an answer. You can answer it with a question too. I remember a couple months ago I came to you asking for parenting advice when my daughter was asking me what death is, and you lent me a book by the Middlebury author Julia Alvarez, who talks about death in a way that is really just asking open-ended questions. It's leaving that space to wonder, and that feels applicable sometimes too when we're talking about politics.
Yeah, and I think kids have questions, but so do adults. And modeling that we don't have all the answers is a good way to show kids that they don't have to have all the answers. And that if one kid is telling them one thing, they don't have to just either refute that or believe it. That there is a healthy curiosity that should carry on from childhood through adulthood.
Mm. Well, we have a couple of folks calling in with their own experiences. Rebecca is in Montpelier. Rebecca, go ahead.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. So I think exposure to the democratic process is super important. So I actually have a 9th grader and a 5th grader at home. And my 5th grader decided to come in with me and my husband to the polling place. And he was very curious about who we were voting for. And we kind of prefaced it. And my husband and I, we actually voted for 2 different candidates. And we explained, like, hey, like, it's okay. Like, we're choosing who we think is right. And just because I think one way or dad thinks another way doesn't make one person right or wrong. There's real autonomy in our decision-making process. And then with my high schooler, how we included her, she had some opinions. And when I asked her, okay, why do you think that way? She wasn't too sure. So there was this great website. It was called I Stand With. .org, or maybe it was a .com, and basically it's this whole test of, like, political stances and, like, what do you believe, and then it came out with a percentage of which candidate most closely aligns with your beliefs based on your results, and this included third-party candidates as well. And so she was very surprised to see that her results did not align with who she was originally saying, and that shifted her perspective to, okay, just because my friends are saying this one candidate doesn't necessarily mean I need to agree with them. Like, I believe in these other things, and this candidate more closely aligns with what I believe. It was a really wonderful thing to see her shift.
That's great, and thanks for sharing that resource. I just looked it up. It's isidewith.com. I want to make sure we squeeze in one more caller here before we have to wrap up. Candace is in Waitsfield. Candace, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. You know, I've had some conversations with my children. I have 2 kids who are in their early 20s. And, you know, after the election on Tuesday, you know, my message was just, like, we can't despair. And knowing what a mandate Trump received this election, you know, to me, it's a message that, you know, those of us who voted for Harris really need to start reaching out and trying to understand why people supported Trump. You know, we were really turned off by Trump's character and had a hard time looking past that. But I know there are other reasons why people are voting for him or did. And I really think we need to start to bridge this divide because it's huge. And I think that's the only way we can start to heal it is to start having these conversations you know, in our communities with our families and really try to understand the differences we have.
Thank you, Candace. So you're talking there about modeling that openness and curiosity yourself for your kids. Jane, do you have other tips to share for how to talk about this moment with children?
Yeah, and I talked with folks on social media as well and heard similar things. Bailey took her kids to vote with her and talked a lot about how we make these choices in our family. And Marissa is talking about ways to feel safe, have kids know you can still feel safe in our home, whether you feel safe or not in external communities. My advice is similar to what we were just hearing. We have to remain in community. We do not want to model divisiveness to our kids. And so I think my advice is talk about your family's values, much less about the sort of sporting aspect of who won or who lost or, gloating over whether you beat the competition. It's not a sport. We're talking about values, and you can model your own family values regardless of who wins an election and talk about that within your home. Here's what our family believes. You get to make your own choices, but here's what, we think and how we want you to be raised. And then, I have a kid who has a lot of social capital, and I reminded him, what you say in your school matters. And so think really carefully about what you're saying and how you say it, and make sure that in line with our family's values, you stand up for yourself and others. So if you see a kid being bullied or you see somebody being mean to another kid because of politics, step in because he has that social capital, and really make sure that you're modeling an idea that we're all trying, we're all doing our best, and we're all working for a happy, healthy community where kids can thrive, and sort of coming at it with that viewpoint, even for children, and in modeling my adult behavior, trying to towards them in that way.
Jade Lindholm is the host of But Why, a podcast for curious kids. You can find it anywhere you get your podcast or find more information on vermontpublic.org. Jane, do you have any election-related episodes coming up, or are you guys taking a little break?
We did one on anxiety. That's out now. You can listen to that if you need tips as a child or an adult. And our next one is about poops and farts.
Oh,
I promise it wasn't related.
That sounds great. All right, that's Jade Lindholm. Thank you to everybody who participated in this show today. It really was heartening to hear all of your different perspectives and your openness to hearing from others in our community.